It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
And he's going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time and Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Roll at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
And he takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline, and it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Colzien takes the snap.
Pass intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Good morning, everybody. The Giants are getting ready for their fifth and final, thank God, preseason game of the season against the New England Patriots, the traditional final preseason game matchup the last few years. And this game, Lance, is going to be a little bit more interesting than games we've seen in the past. We are going to see the starters for probably 10 to 15 plays, which means a couple of series, a couple of possessions to see if the offense and the offensive line can build on momentum that they had at the end of the first half in preseason game number 4 last week. And we'll see if this offensive line, which quite frankly, we don't know what it's going to look like week 1 against Detroit. Maybe it's going to be these 5 guys. Nobody seems to know, can get some continuity and protect Eli Manning.
Yeah, especially for the offensive line, you need them to go out there and get some snaps, John, because there's so many injuries right now. Jeff Schwartz with the dislocated toe, it's a week-to-week thing right now after he gets out of that walking boot. You have Brandon Mosley with the back injury. Those are two players that were penciled in to be as part of the starting offensive line come week 1 against the Detroit Lions. So now we're talking about Weston Richburg, potentially at left guard, John Jerry at right guard. You need to gain some continuity over the next few weeks before all of a sudden this season gets started, or else it's going to be a very up-and-down performance to start this season.
And we've said it again, but I'll go through the teams one more time. First month of the season, folks. Lions. Nick Fairley, even though he's underachieved in his NFL career, very talented. Ndamukong Suh. Ziggy Ansah. Week 1. Week 2. Cardinals. Top 10 team in terms of sacks last year. Lost Darnell Dockett. I get it. Still a very good defense, very good front. A lot of size up there. Week 3. You get the Wonder Twins, Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt.
Did you nickname that yourself?
I just made up.
Okay, I was going to say, I didn't know that was circulating around the world.
No, that was just me coming up with it. You like it?
We'll see if it's
there. They aren't really twins, so I'm not sure if it works. But
well, that's why I didn't know where you're going with it.
Well, you got the two good guys up front with J.J. Watt and Jadeveon
Clowney. We can leave it at that.
And then in week 4, you have a very creative blitzing defense with Jim Haslett's Redskins D. So that is very much a tough first month for this offensive line. They're not going to have time to get into a rhythm here and be good in week 3. They're going to have to be good in week 1 in order to protect their quarterback. And look, we know how fragile seasons can be. We know how fragile quarterbacks can be. The Giants were fortunate enough last year, and I'll use the word lucky enough last year, to have Eli last the entire season. He didn't get hurt until the final week of the year when he finally got bent over the wrong way and he hurt his ankle. And he would have been out for a month if that would have happened earlier in the year. And if you don't protect your quarterback, Lance, there's a good chance that happens in the first month. So how this offensive line comes together is really going to be the key to this first half of the year.
Well, we've seen him get his fair share of pressure already, John, during the course of the preseason. It hasn't been a smooth ride over these first 4 games. So that's why it's somewhat of a concern. And the fact that, as you mentioned, it's where they basically left off last season. The positive is they've been running the football well, regardless of who's pretty much been in there as part of the offensive line. You just like to see a little bit more consistency in the pass protection department. And, you know, perhaps they'll be aided by whichever tight end solidifies a starting gig or who can be a reliable blocker. The wide receivers are going to have to help out even more this season. And the running backs are going to have to improve in the pass protection department. Rashad Jennings did a great job helping Eli Manning buy time on that touchdown pass to Reuben Randall late in the first half against the Jets. Andre Williams, he's still going through the learning curve, but the running backs are going to have to take on a bulk of the responsibility this season, especially early on.
All right, let's open up the phones at 201-939-4513. We'll get to your calls in just a minute. Lance, I want to talk one other issue tonight. No Odell Beckham Jr., obviously, but I think a battle at the skill positions is going to be going on all over the offensive side of the ball. At fullback, Hinoski versus Connor. The back end of the running back competition, will they keep three? Will they keep four? Again, I'm talking halfbacks now, not including the fullbacks. Will it be Hillis and Gaskins or Cox? Just Hillis? Will one of the one guys beat him out? That's something we'll watch. Will they keep six wide receivers, or will they just keep five? Will Prescott be on? Will Talley be on? Will Manningham make a late run tonight and try to get on this team? Will Jernigan maintain his presence as the team's third receiver? And then the tight ends. Will they keep all four guys that are on the roster, or are these four guys fighting for three spots? Those are all positions that are in question tonight, and the offense is what everyone should be watching.
And Mario Manningham is probably one of the key names to keep close tabs on, because this is really do or die for him tonight, especially with the way that Preston Parker has been performing, Corey Washington has been performing, Trindon Holliday, who knows what's going to happen regarding him, and he's unlikely to get out there tonight, as well as Odell Beckham Jr., as you mentioned. So Manningham is going to get plenty of reps tonight, John. This is an opportunity for him to show the coaching staff why they should potentially keep him, because he is on an extreme bubble, and I'll leave it at that.
And things like knowing your assignments and things like that will be important. But I think one of the things that Coach Coughlin and these other coaches in the Giants front office is going to be keeping an eye on tonight is a very simple thing. Who can make a play? Who can go out there, put the extra effort forth, make that athletic play that goes above the X's and O's? The Giants need as many of those guys as they can get, Lance, and they haven't had many flashes of that in the preseason except for that big Rashad Jennings run and the numerous catches by Corey Washington. We haven't seen anybody else really make a play.
Parker made a nice touchdown grab last week.
He did, over the top. That's
right.
True. But that's what they're looking for. They're looking for guys that can make plays.
Absolutely. This is supposed to be a dynamic offense. This is supposed to be an opportunity to get out in open space, and right now at least the starters have not necessarily flourished with those opportunities. So you'd like to see, in even though it's a limited amount of reps tonight, you know, maybe Victor Cruz could do something, Jarrell Jernigan, Randall a little bit more, just so that they have a positive vibe heading into that regular season opener.
All right, how about we get to the phones at 201-939-4513. We go north of the border. Jason's up in Montreal. Jason, good morning.
What's up, sir?
What's up, Jay?
I know. Yo, I want to tell y'all, man, thanks a lot for that ALS Ace Bucket Challenge, though, eh?
Hey, no problem. Listen, we were challenged, and we came through, and we're hoping the rest of the callers do the same.
Now, I know, Jason, you above everybody else, must have enjoyed Lance getting on top of that bucket.
Yo, all I got to say for that, honestly, I thought that you were going to have to give him one of those, you know, mountain climbing picks, one of those shoes, spike shoes that get him up on that bucket. I was afraid this dude's going to pull a handy, man.
Hey, I used a lot of Arnica, as Charlie and Maine recommended before I got up there.
Yeah, maybe you could be put on that offensive line like everybody's complaining about there, right? Anyways, listen, I just wanted to say one thing real quick. You know, going into this game, like I said, I'm not expecting a lot. I hope that that the offense, the first line, could click on the way that they're supposed to and all that. But I'm very, very optimistic with this season, man. Honestly, I'm looking at what's going on, and I'm a fan, so I'm cheering them on like crazy, you know? But one thing, like, I keep having stuck in my head is back in the day, Kershawn saying, you know, we got to temper expectations because we can't fill every single hole that we had in the off season in one season. And that's what I think people need to stress and understand. There is a lot of holes still to be filled, especially on the offensive line. And, like, going back to yesterday's calls, Lance, when you're talking about, you know, like, we need more depth at guards than we do on left tackle, I agree with you. But like I said, it's just there's going to be injuries. This is the NFL. There's going to be injuries, and we're going to have to end up finding ways to, you know, kind of temper expectations and try to work what we got. I think that we're going to look at the 53 once the 75 get cut. We're going to look at something there. But like I said, those are cuts, and they're cuts for a reason. So we gotta have to just temper expectations. But I think we're going to have a good year. I'm predicting a good 9-7.
All right, Jason. Appreciate the call, my friend.
All right, yo.
Good stuff, my friend. And look, he mentioned the left tackle depth, and I just want to say one more thing. Will Beatty, to me, is still one of the most important players this year on this team. He's got to stay healthy, and he's got to play well.
Can't get around that, given the fact that Brewer is hurt, Charles Brown is hurt. Did I miss anybody else, John?
Nope.
Because it seems every left tackle they bring in doesn't survive.
And they've given Pugh a little bit of a run at left tackle in practice, but still nothing significant. I wonder if we'll see him play left tackle at all in the game on Thursday.
But remember, you can't afford to take him out of the right tackle spot because you don't have much depth there either.
I mean, you could do that maybe once the first team offense is off the field. You want to put him out there for a little bit just to get him some run there just in case, but I wouldn't expect that to happen.
And we should also note, a player that doesn't get a lot of notoriety because he literally just recently joined the team in August, Adam Gress, the undrafted rookie out of Penn State, he got some reps at left tackle this week
with
at practice.
With the second team.
Yeah.
So, desperate times call for desperate
All
measures.
All I'm saying is, if you watch this game tonight, once again, make sure you have the depth chart handy. I'm going to leave it at that.
201-939-4513. Andrew's in Stanhope. Andrew, you're up next, pal.
Hey, guys. Antrell Roll, he shouldn't have tweeted out about the James the second or the third, is it?
It's the second. It's the second. Well, you know, Andrew, I get it. You know, Antrell's an emotional guy. It's a teammate.
Right.
It's someone that he's really taken under his wing and really has become close to. So I understand his emotional response. I give Antrell credit. While he expressed disappointment in his tweets about James getting cut, he didn't really take shots at the front office, though, either. You know what I mean? He seemed to do it in a pretty respectful way where I understand the business. I don't like it. And good. Look, Charles James hasn't been picked up yet. So there's a really good chance he's back here on this practice squad this year.
Exactly. And he did handle it well the way he wrote. It wasn't, inappropriate or
right. It
wasn't, it was professional the way he tweeted. But I just thought what Paul Dottino said is that when there's that first cut, sometimes the team will try to sneak someone through, trying to trick and say, okay, well, this guy, was cut early, whereas the very last cut, it's like those are the players that are better than the players that are cut in the first round of cuts. So he may have been one of those players
right. That
they cut early to try to trick the other teams. So that's why Antrell Roll shouldn't have said anything, because maybe he's like exposing their hand, exposing their trick to hide him so they could put him on the practice.
Well, Andrew, I look at it this way, though. If he was going to get picked up, he's cleared waivers, he would have gotten picked up by now.
Okay, and also just hopefully, Eli won't fall into that Dave Brown situation where I just like people were making fun of Dave Brown saying, oh, I remember him. But when he was the quarterback, the offensive line fell apart. Chris Callaway was the wide receiver who was so slow that he caught a pass that he was in the open with the touchdown in front of him, and he had to stop and try to make a move on the Dallas defender because even though he was ahead of him, he wasn't fast enough to outrun him, even though he had almost a 10-yard cushion. Rodney Hampton was a great running back, but when he bulked up, it was like 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and he carried the ball over 500 times, and only one of the runs was over 35 yards. So Howard Cross was a good, blocker, decent receiver. So when you have the Tiki Barber, Shockey, Amani Toomer, a good offensive line like Eli had, it's a completely different, hand of cards for the quarterback.
Now, look, Andrew, you're 100% right. I think your point is solid. I'm not comparing Dave Brown to Eli Manning now either. I don't think that's fair. But the quarterback, to be successful, needs to have the talent around him to utilize to be a great quarterback. He can't do it on his own.
And I'm excited for the final game. My wife is surprised because she became a Giant fan after Belichick, left the organization. So when she sees Belichick on the Giants.com, like on Giants Chronicles and praising the Giants, and it puzzles her because she's like, there's Belichick. he's talking good about the Giants. But I'm excited for tonight, and I'll leave you with this question. Do you think the running back will be on the practice squad? I think his name is Gaston, not
Kendall Gaskins, yeah.
Yeah, you think he'll be on the practice squad, and do you have any other practice squad predictions? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ed. You appreciate it.
There's a chance Gaskins could go on the practice squad because, right now they're not going to keep Cox and Gaskins. I would assume they're going to keep, obviously, Peyton Hillis as that third, and then it'll be a battle between Cox and Gaskins.
They might not keep either.
True, they could go away with just three, but I think with Hillis's injury history and the fact that Andre Williams is a rookie, I'd keep a fourth as an insurance policy.
What if you keep three and put two on the practice squad? That way you can elevate either one of those two guys.
They have the flexibility now that you keep 10 players on the practice squad. You could do that. Unless, obviously, they see value in Michael Cox as a special teamer.
See, I think if neither makes the team, I think Cox is probably more valuable as a practice squatter because of his ability to return kicks.
He's more valuable than any of those running backs mentioned because he at least is a two-dimensional player, meaning you could use him in two of your three facets.
He's not exactly a good pass protector, but you sacrifice some things. That's how I look at it. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Len down in Columbia, Maryland. Leonard?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How you doing, Len?
Good, good, good. I'm reminded on Andrew's talking about Rodney Hampton, Dan Reeves quote, "I've had bigger running backs than Rodney. I've had faster running backs than Rodney, but I've never had a running back as big and fast as Rodney."
He was a good, and you know what? He was a great combination of size and speed, Len. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but I know a lot of fans out there probably weren't old enough when Hampton was here. You know, he was unbelievable. He hurt his knee, and he really had to change the type of running back that he was, become more of a power back when he lost some of that side-to-side quickness, and it really, unfortunately, shortened his career. He could have been, and probably would have been, the leading rusher in Giants history if he didn't suffer that knee injury a couple years into his career.
You know, on the injury front, and that's a really interesting point. You know, we cheer for these guys, and the one thing we have to remember, they go out, give their all, and like Rodney, shred their knee on our behalf. I know it's on their behalf, too. They're making a lot of money and so forth. But, you know, it's hard to be critical. You know, I mean, they go out there, not only risk injury, but sustained injuries that, you know, so we can cheer. It's really kind of an amazing thing. Hey, listen, a couple of comments. You're probably not going to agree with me on this, and they're going to play this game tonight. They're not going to cancel it, but help me understand.
Okay.
Really, in the end, what are we going to learn tonight that we don't already know? And what are we risking to supposedly learn that? You know,
it's a good question.
We've made decisions for the last 16 to 20 years after four preseason games. We've played four preseason games. Make the decision.
I'm not sure, Len, you're learning anything new tonight, but I do think you get one more look at the offense and you give the guys more game time experience in the system. I'm not sure you're going to learn anything more about these players, but I do think there's something to be said for giving these guys on the bottom half of the roster extended time, and we're talking like three quarters in this game now, to go out there and see who can make that play. And, you know, sometimes if you're only running out there for 16 to 18 snaps, it's hard to make that play. But if you have, you know, 40, 50 snaps in three quarters, all of a sudden, you know, maybe Preston Parker shows something that he hasn't shown yet in practice that you can only see in a game. You know, if Cooper Taylor hadn't gotten put on IR, it would have been a great situation for both those safeties to go out there and show that they can make a play on the ball, make a big hit in the run game. So I think it's giving these guys one more opportunity to show the coaches in a game situation, especially the back end guys again, an extended time to show if they can make a play.
Hey, in your next career, you need to go into advertising and promotion. That's pretty terrific.
No, but Len, the bottom line is you're right.
I wonder about the risk. Risk reward.
Yeah, look, you don't need five preseason games, Len. You need four. This is a weird year with the whole thing, and they're playing five. If they do eventually cancel preseason games, which might actually happen, it is going to make evaluating the bottom half of the roster a lot tougher because you can't have contact in practice anymore, and there are some things you can only see in the game. And with fewer than four games, it's going to be hard to figure out which one of these young guys you should keep over the other. It's not going to be easy.
And, Len, a lot of people also remember the fact that Andre Brown got hurt in this game at this time last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously you can lose a starter. I agree.
But the fact that this
is a brand-new offense, I think it's worth throwing out some of these offensive linemen at least. I mean, you know, I'm not too worried about what Rashad Jennings or Eli Manning is going to do, but it'd be nice to see five offensive linemen play together for a few snaps before the start of the regular season.
Len, I will say this. The first time of Eli getting put on his backside, I'm taking him out of the game.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Please. I don't even want to think about it. Listen, Charles James, you know, the nature of the game forever and ever, and more so today, particularly at the position that Charles played, good big people beat good little people.
That's a good point.
In football. And, you know, I don't know who the player was, but I remember Parcells saying one thing about a small defensive back one time, and I really can't remember the name. I'm not trying to hide the player here, but, you know, somebody said, well, why'd you cut him? He said, I cut him before he'd get hurt. He's too small. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
I hear you.
The nature of this game is good big people beat good little people. And, you know, at his position, I mean, look at Seattle. I mean, everything's trending that way.
Well, but keep in mind, Earl Thomas is a very small safety, and he's one of the best in the game. And he's not a tall guy at all.
Yeah. Listen, I wish Charles well. He may want to, he's eligible for our practice squad, isn't he?
Yes, sir.
As he falls into that one. Listen, on the practice squad question, on moving to 10 players.
Yeah.
The last, I'll call them the last two, because those were the ones that we most recently approved. They don't have to be these quasi-veterans, do they? They can be young players.
Yeah, correct.
You can go, okay, correct. Okay, just wanted to know that. Listen, on the offensive line, I know yesterday there was discussion. Paul thinks maybe we're going to pick up two or three guys here, you know, in the next week and so forth. You know what? Jerry brought in John Jerry for a reason. He brought him in for a reason.
Yeah, but Len, I don't think John Jerry's one of those guys that's going to get cut for somebody else. I think you're going to see a tackle, maybe somebody new come in.
Well, I guess what I'm leading up to with this is, we're going to have to keep nine because we're going to have to hide Schwartz for a few weeks here.
And maybe Mosley too. Who knows?
Well, you know, okay, but I think we find the nine, including Jeff, on our roster. And let's go forward. You've heard me say this over the last couple of years. I firmly believe this. We're not, and I'm gonna bring up Winston Justice's name because that name came up yesterday. We are not going to beat the Eagles with Eagles castoffs. And as you know, that's where Winston started his career. We're not going to beat the Dallas. We're not going to beat, you know, just take Jerry. Listen, his job was to find us eight offensive lineman, and it's an average group. Let's just go forward with that group and see what happens. So I'm not for picking up four guys next week off the street, three of them offensive linemen. I think we got the guy. I think we got the guys on the line who can do it. And the last thing I want to say going into the last preseason game, you know, let's go Giants. Let's win. Let's be 5-0. Let's continue that good feeling that we already got. I don't want to lose that feeling, guys. I don't want to lose that feeling.
Thanks, Len.
Take care. Thank you.
Be good, bye-bye, man. Good to hear from bye. You. 201-939-4513. By the way, we are going to do our final 53s tomorrow, so we can have fun with that off the game tonight. Back to the phones. Bruno's in Atlanta. Bruno, what's up?
Hey, how y'all doing? Glad
to be
on.
Bruno, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
All right. My focus is on the tight ends. Before I mention that, though, I just want to say, you know, I have more faith in Jerry Reese than most. You know, I don't envy him for having to try to balance the salary cap and doing everything he's done, but he has brought us two Super Bowls. You know, we're in a much, much better position than some other teams. We got a proven quarterback, head coach, and GM that have won us two Super Bowls. So I'd rather be us than the Houston Texans or the Bengals or some of the other teams in the NFL.
Very true.
That being said, tight ends. It's this tight end by committee. You know, Adrian Robinson, young guy, hasn't really proven anything. You know, we may have the guys, Len thinks we have the guys on the current roster to move forward with. As far as the tight end position, I believe JerMichael Finley and Fred Davis are both available free agents. I don't know if you guys have covered them.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think health-wise JerMichael Finley has been cleared yet. I know Fred Davis coming off the ACL last year. I'm not sure what his medical status is either.
Okay. Because, I mean, Finley's played in the offense, in Ben McAdoo's offense. And another point with the tight ends, we let Mike Pope go, a proven, you know, winner, a coach. He's made something out of nothing before. You know, Jake Ballard wasn't highly touted. Kevin Boss wasn't highly touted. And we won Super Bowls with those guys. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys can comment
on. Well, Bruno, let me ask you this. Who do you think was the guy that helped mold JerMichael Finley in Green Bay? It was the offensive coordinator of the New York Giants right now. So when you say that Mike Pope turned unknown commodities into productive players, Ben McAdoo has a decent track record too. So, you know, I mean,
one Super Bowl versus four Super Bowls is my point.
Well, you know? But, I mean, you can't just judge it based on Super Bowls. I think you have to judge it based on taking a player that wasn't a known guy and actually making him somebody that could flourish in an offense. And Ben McAdoo and the Packers have done that over the last few years. It's not just Finley. It's Tom Crabtree. It's Andrew Quarles. I mean, I could sit here and list a number of other tight ends. It's not just JaMychal Finley. Everybody focuses on Finley, but they've had a number of different tight ends that have been productive. I'm not saying they're Pro Bowl caliber players, but they've done enough to thrive within the system. And I think that there's enough players here that they can be somewhat productive within this system as well. I don't think you have to go out and get a name guy just to appease to the fan base.
No, I'm not saying the name guy, just a proven guy in this offense. Because, I mean, it, you know, if you're talking about a specialist at a position, if we bring in a Fells or Larry Donnell to be the blocking tight end, you know, I think opposing defenses are going to know. If we're bringing in Adrian Robinson to be supposedly our pass-catching tight end, defenses can adjust that. If you got one guy in there, and I'm – you know,
well, but I think they're going to use
prime,
two tight ends.
Two guys that are good.
I think they're going to use two. And Tom Coughlin even touched on that. The reason why I believe, actually, I think they're going to keep all four of these tight ends is because they're going to mix and match. Everybody is going to be utilized for their strengths. So if you have Adrian Robinson and Larry Dinellen at the same time, I mean, both of them can go out and receive. I don't think you become that predictable from that standpoint. New England uses a lot of double tight ends, too. I understand your point. Your concern is that if we put this tight end out there and he's only known to do this element, then all of a sudden the defense says, oh, well, you know, they're gonna run him. They're not necessarily going to hold him back on the offensive line, and we could blitz extra. And that's a fair point, but I think we're going to see two tight ends out there. And, Bruno, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. So I don't know if the Giants are going to become as predictable as maybe a lot of people are concerned.
And I want to go back to what Len said for real one quick second before we get back to the calls. Generally, I agree. You're not going to get guys off the scrap heap that are going to help you, but for salary cap purposes, for roster numbers purposes, good players do get cut at this time of year. So I have no problem picking up guys that other teams cut at this time, because maybe the guys that other teams are cutting are better than the guys that you're cutting.
Well, they could pick up maybe a body here or there, but when Len was quoting Paul, and I haven't heard Paul say this, I mean, they're not taking three or four offensive linemen off the street and revamping this entire depth chart.
No, I don't think all at the same position, but would it shock me that if after cuts they pick up maybe one tight end,
no,
one offensive lineman, and maybe one other guy in another spot, and there's three new guys in the team next week? That wouldn't shock me.
Not at all, but I don't think it's just going to be solely focused on one position.
I agree. 100%. 201-939-4513. Ryan is in the Bronx. Ryan, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. You know, I enjoy listening to the show. I was just saying that I'm excited about the team, especially Andre Williams. You know, I'm like everybody else, kind of shaky still on about the, you know, tight ends or the offensive line. I'm really still trying to keep up with the team because there's so many new, more changes. But I really like Corey Washington. I want to know what you think about putting Odell Beckham in the slot, Corey Washington over on the other side of Victor Cruz, and maybe Ruben Randall, and trying to get some other pieces involved, you know, maybe a pick or whatever. So I'm going to hang up and let y'all, you know, speak on that.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call, man. I wouldn't put Beckham in the slot, to be honest with you. I think he can be effective outside. I think Cruz is your slot guy. I think he's a better slot receiver than Beckham is. I think Beckham, with his speed and strength, can operate outside the numbers. And I think you put him and Randall outside. You put Cruz in the slot. If you want to rotate a little Corey Washington in there from time to time, if he continues to improve and get better, that's fine too. But when this season started and this, you know, training camp started, Ryan, my thought was, you have Cruz in the slot, you got Randall at the X, you put Beckham at the Y, you can switch those guys back and forth if you want based on, you know, which guy's playing better. You always want your best guy at that X spot. At least it did in Gilbride's offense. I'm not even sure if it really matters much in McAdoo's. I haven't really asked that question much, to be honest with you. But I think those are your three. And I think if Corey Washington proves he can be a guy too, you can maybe, you know, mess around with him being outside a little bit in four wide receiver sets. But Lance, I think once Beckham gets healthy, and it's going to happen eventually, I think Cruz is still in the slot, and I think Beckham's an outside guy.
I would think that that's probably the way they're going to lay it out, because, you know, when you look at what Victor Cruz has done over the course of his career, I mean, he's had versatility, but they like him in his matchups within the slot. And Odell Beckham Jr. has played outside during the course of his collegiate career. But, you know, they're going to have to toy and experiment early on because, John, at the end of the day, the goal is we want our best receiving core out there at the same time.
Yep.
If that means they have to make adjustments here or there, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
201-939-4513. Jake's in New Jersey. Jake, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, guys?
How are you, Jake?
Who's likely going to get more snaps, Payne Hillis or Andre Williams?
I think Peyton Hillis will get more snaps tonight than Andre Williams because I think the Giants know what they have in Andre Williams.
All right.
That's it?
I'm saying, yeah.
All right. Appreciate the vocal. Call, short and sweet to the
hey,
point.
Look, the bottom line is I think the Giants know that Andre Williams is the guy that's on this team. He's going to have a role in the running game probably, I'd say, anywhere from, what'd you say, 8 to 12 carries a game for Williams and like 16 to 18 for Jennings? Does that sound about right to you?
Sounds about right. I mean, he's probably going to get a lot of more snaps, Jennings, because of his receiving capabilities.
Right.
So that, you know, may break down the snaps differently. But in terms of carries, if we just go by carries, I think that that's a fair assessment.
16 to 18 and like 8 to 10?
Yeah, 2 to 1 type of ratio.
And I would say Jennings would maybe get 2 out of every 3 snaps and Williams would get 1 out of every 3 snaps. Give or take, maybe 75-25.
Though I will say as the season progresses, John, I think those numbers are not going to balance out, but it's not going to be, I think, as lopsided. I think Williams will take on a bigger role, and I'll have more confidence in him perhaps being on passing third down situations.
Assuming he plays well, too.
Correct,
and
absolutely.
He shows he can catch the ball, because let's be honest, he did a little bit better in the spring. The last couple weeks of camp, he didn't catch anything.
Well,
it was bad. It was bad.
Listen, David Wilson had some shaky beginnings here.
That's true.
And that hurt him moving forward, but if Andre Williams can at least be disciplined early on, right, I don't think they're going to throw him in the doghouse like they did with Wilson.
Hey, and the beautiful thing about Andre Williams, too, is that he's going to work on it. That kid's a worker. He's smart. He
good
cares.
Attitude.
He's diligent. So he's going to try to get better. Now, some guys just don't have good hands. It's facts. You know, there are some corner. Remember back, I don't have to remind Giant fans, Will Peterson and Will Allen, they used to make great plays, and then they dropped the pass on those interception attempts. So some guys just don't have good hands. 201-939-4513. Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's happening, guys? What's up,
all? How are you, man?
Enjoying my birthday today. I'm good.
Oh, happy birthday, Steve.
Thank you.
Maybe you could dump another ice cube bucket full of water on your head in honor of the birthday. No?
No, not quite. No. Shakes has not delivered. Just thought I would put that off there.
Well, I needed to set you up for that, so at least you could, you know, rip on one of our callers.
There you go, my man. Listen, Lance, I'm about to rip on you right now.
All right, rip on
me. About to rip on you.
Oh, no. What do you got? Steve, go get him.
I mean, are you really going to try to compare Mike Polk's resume to McAdoo? Really? I mean, best of all, you name one tight end that anybody could even know. I mean, come on, man. Listen, I'm not disappointed in McAdoo. I mean, I have no reason to. I'm willing to read up about it, but let's not boast. You know, that's about his resume, please. He doesn't really have one.
How does he not have a resume?
Really
he's been in a variety of different NFL systems. It's not as if this guy is 23 years old and just walked through the door.
He's coached under Sean Payton. He's coached under Ben McAdoo. He's coached for the 49ers. I mean, look, I'm not telling you he hasn't accomplished as an assistant coach resume as Mike Pope, Steve. I mean, few do. The guy's been coaching for 40 years. But don't say McAdoo doesn't have a history here coaching tight ends, coaching quarterbacks, where he's had some level of success. He has had some success.
How long did he coach the tight end in Green Bay?
I think 4 years?
It would have been three or four years.
I'll look it up.
And all we can come up with is JaMichael Finley. I mean, listen, it's
no,
not
I didn't. Well, hold on, Steve. I named like three or four other tight ends, and it didn't.
None of them know anything about.
Well, but Steve, okay, Steve, just because you don't recognize the names doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve credit for that. Come on, you know, I mean, Jake Ballard and Kevin Boss, Mike Pope is responsible for, and I could take any non-Giant fan, and they would be like, "Who are those two guys?" So you know, let's at least put things in perspective here.
I am because I'm a Green Bay is my team. I'm a huge Aaron Rodgers fan, so I watch their team closely. Those names just don't mean anything.
Well, Steve, I can tell you, I will give you the facts here. Ben McAdoo coached the tight ends for the Packers from 2006 to 2011. He was their quarterbacks coach in 2012 and 2013.
Okay, listen, it's like I said, I didn't call it, you know, to try to talk bad about McAdoo. All I'm saying is that Pope was probably the best tight end coach in the NFL by a long shot. That's all I'm saying. So the athlete, you know, it's not a loss to our, you know, our tight end position. It is a loss. I don't know why it happened, but it is a loss. I mean, I don't, you know, and hopefully, you know, like I said, McAdoo can fulfill that role, even though he has another huge responsibility trying to install his whole new offense. So I'm not, you know, I just can't really feel like we made an upgrade or even, you know, made a neutral switch as far as not having the Pope on the roster. But with that being said, I'm, like I said, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. It is what it is. But I was just, you know, only really question I had today, guys, if you can just tell me a little bit about injury with Beeson and, you know, and Prince. How is Prince practicing? Do we expect him to play this evening?
Honestly, Steve, I think if this was a regular season game tonight, Prince probably would have been able to go, but they're going to keep him out just to be cautious. But I would expect him to be full go in practice next week and then for the first regular season game Monday night. I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay. Was Beeson on schedule to make the Detroit game?
That's what we're hearing.
Haven't heard about any setbacks, so, I mean, at this point, assuming he gets through next week, should be able to go.
Steve, we were watching him on the side of practice today. He's running full speed, cutting full speed, you know, putting a lot of pressure on that foot. Frankly, he looks like he could have been practicing last week already. I think the Giants are just being cautious with him.
Well, okay, well, since I got you, what about James, man? Are we going to think we'll find a way to get him back on the roster if he's not claimed, or
I think he will certainly be a practice squad option once everything shakes out. Remember, there's still a couple of corners like Fenner, a guy who made that first set of cuts. So it'll be interesting to see how many DBs they end up keeping. But I think Charles James will certainly be mentioned in the conversation.
Cool. One last thing before I go is, I meant to say this yesterday. I was really disappointed in Walter Thurman's lack of tackling in the last game. He's okay that when he's down in the box, but on the outside, he was terrible. And I felt like he was avoiding tackles big time. I've seen it with my own eyes on a couple plays. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I ask everybody to pay close attention to that.
All right, Steve.
The next game. So, hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a great show.
Thanks for calling,
Steve. Appreciate it.
I'll say this. I didn't notice the Thurman tackling thing, I got to be honest with you, but he has struggled in coverage in the preseason games, and he's been lights out in practice. You know, I couldn't say more good things about him. He's literally shut down Victor Cruz for a month, but he struggled in games. I would like to see him play a little bit better tonight.
Though, in fairness, you tend to see the tendencies of the wide receiver you go up against when you see him every day. Then all of a sudden you see a different opponent. It's hard to adjust that quickly.
I also feel like we've seen him play outside more in games than we've seen him play in practice.
Well, and I think part of that's been because of the injuries, John, too. That's why they moved him outside. So, you know, maybe he's somewhat out of his comfort zone. That's a good point, considering at Seattle he played in the slot. But I would agree with you. I've seen issues in terms of the coverage more so than the tackling, and that's been somewhat troubling. There were opportunities, specifically in that Colts game, if I recall, on some slants where he could have maybe got his hand in the passing lane, and he was just arguably beat, and they scored a touchdown as a result.
And he got beat outside on the sideline when he played outside a little bit in that game, too. The little short slot receiver for the Colts caught that pass over the shoulder near the sideline on him, so I would like to see him play better.
By the way, getting a little off topic here, and Saraceno brings up a great point. He says, Steve from D.C. just said quietly that Green Bay is my team. So Saraceno's questioning that and saying that that is a reason to get on Steve. So we're going to remember that.
I did hear that.
We'll allow him to maybe clarify that at a future date. But he came out and said that. Then I heard him say he's a big fan of Aaron Rodgers. So maybe that's what he was alluding
to. Probably.
In fairness, I'm not going to go out and kill him, you know, because I want him to at least digest all of the Packers' tight ends over the next few days if he's truly a Packers fan. And then I want him to now recite all of their numbers and tell me their ups and downs.
I mean, there are some teams, even if you're not a fan of the team, you follow more
True.
Than others.
That's why I'm not going to necessarily kill him for that.
If still, I'll put it this way. If Steve's a Packers fan and he calls a Giants show this much, something's wrong with him.
I'm well, the other thing is, if he's a Packers fan, true. But if he's a Packers fan, then if I tell you Tom Crabtree and Andrew Quarles, you should know who those guys
correct,
are.
Right.
When he told me that he had no idea who they were.
I think Steve knows who they are. They don't ring the bell for him. It's one of those deals where they don't impress him that much, which quite frankly isn't surprising. Tom Crabtree's been a free agent all offseason. No one's picked him up.
Correct. But I would say the same thing if I didn't follow the Giants about Kevin Boss and Jake Ballard.
Of course.
They don't ring my bell either the last time I checked.
201-939-4513. Steve's going to be called back.
I know he is.
Not be happy tomorrow. You know that, right?
Well, but we're not ripping him. We're trying to clarify his own words, in fairness. We're not, you know, getting on him too hard. Saraceno threw that out.
You are raising some questions, Lance.
I'm raising some questions. Listen, he was raising some questions with my tight end debate, so I'm fair to raise some questions in return.
He is not going
to
be happy if you
don't. I am not. Listen, I have made sure that I didn't totally rip him. All I said was I think he was alluding more towards Aaron Rodgers, but he can feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. Steve knows where to find me.
Shane in New York City's up next. Shane, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm doing great, Shane.
I feel like I wanted to ask you guys like a more specific question.
Sure, what do you got?
If, let's just say the offensive line was doing okay, right? You know what I mean? Like, Schwartz wasn't injured. They were playing the way we had all hoped they'd play.
Yeah.
The inception of the offseason, et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys feel like, and I'm using this word semi-loosely because obviously I know he's more than athletic if he's able to play in the NFL. Is Eli Manning athletic enough to run this offense? And, like, I know Eli's like on the first team going against other first teamers, and I know Ryan Nassib is on the second or third team respectively going against other caliber players, you know, in the same.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it just seems like Nassib just kind of looks more comfortable, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it. So I guess what I'm saying is, does Eli Manning have the, I guess, overall athleticism, or is he athletically dynamic enough to run this offense, even with a good offensive line?
Well, I'll answer your questions in two ways. First, I'll comment on the Nassib looking more comfortable thing. And, you know, in the games, I can see why fans would say, I think Nassib looked more comfortable in the offense. And if I just watched the games, I'd agree with you. I'd say, you know what, you're right. But, and it hasn't been as bad in recent weeks in practice, but through the first 3 or 4 weeks of practice, we were seeing Ryan Nassib throw 2 or 3 picks in every practice, and Payne throw a couple picks in every practice. So,
right.
I mean, Eli did outplay those two guys in practice every day. So let me say that first. Now, as for Eli being athletic enough question, I do think there are certain principles in the West Coast offense that require the quarterback to move in the pocket a little bit. Now, I do think you can call plays to work around that a little bit, and I do believe Ben McAdoo isn't a guy that, to me, is stubborn to the fact where he's going to make Eli do things that maybe he's not good enough at. But I think with design plays where you move the pocket and you roll out, Eli should be athletic enough to get things done. Now, is he going to look graceful doing it? Is he going to look like, you know, Randall Cunningham doing it? No, he's not. But he's going to be able to move the pocket enough. You know, for example, that deep pass to Victor Cruz, if you remember, in that preseason game against the Colts, he had Victor Cruz in stride while he was rolling to his right.
Right.
It was a perfect pass on the money. And I think a play like that should give you some confidence that he can move the pocket a little bit and make some throws on the move.
You know what's interesting about the point you raised? I was talking to my wife about it when we were watching the game. I see what you're saying, and yeah, it was a breath of fresh air. You know what I mean? To see that happen. But then at the same time, the first thing that my brain thought about was, Jesus, it's a little scary to me that he looks more comfortable in the new offense going down the field than he does look in the intermediate kind of stuff. I just feel like there's going to be a lot more intermediate stuff, but I understand what you're saying about, like, tailoring certain plays, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, I thought it was interesting that, like, what you're saying is, like, well, he looked good on that downfield to Victor Cruz, but then at the same time, he's so comfortable downfield. Is that, like, is it almost a bad thing that he only looks comfortable going downfield, you know?
Well, I think a lot of those short passes that you're alluding to that are just not on the same page is more just because of timing, and also because a lot of the wide receivers sometimes that practice, keep in mind, are not necessarily out on the field during the preseason games, and that hasn't helped anybody.
Well, though, in fairness, Cruz and Randall haven't missed practice.
True, but even the other guys who, to be honest with you, I think it's more important he builds continuity with that third or fourth wide receiver because, I mean,
Jernigan hasn't missed practice a whole lot, though.
Well, Vic, he's, in fairness, the narrative to me is off base with Jernigan because Jernigan, he's connected with. Jernigan hasn't caught many of the passes that have been thrown his way. That's been the problem with Jernigan. It's not so much timing. It's the fact that sometimes there's a lack of concentration on Jernigan's part. He's there to make the catch, and then he doesn't haul it in.
Right.
So, you know, I think that we need to at least look at it from that perspective when we're looking at Jernigan's play.
And I want to say one other thing, too. And, Shane, thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it. We have a bunch of guys on hold here. One more thing in terms of Eli, and I agree with Lance. I think it's a timing issue. And if you listen to Ben McAdoo talk about this offense, a lot of it is three-step drops. You hit that third step, and you release the ball. And it's a deal where you have to trust your footwork to get rid of the ball on time. And it's a different type of thing than Eli's done before. And I do think it's going to take some time to get that going and to make it consistent. On those slants and those shallow crosses, you have to hit the guys in stride, pinpoint, so they can catch it and run after the catch. And look, when we talk about the offense not being tailored to Eli's strength in some ways, I think those are some of the ways we're talking about.
The positive is, though, he has connected with the running backs a few times on short passes. Maybe not so much the wide receivers, but at least the running backs have been involved a little during the course of the preseason.
Let's go to Roger on Long Island. Roger, what's up, pal?
Hey, gentlemen. Nice to talk to you guys. Love the show.
Thank you for calling in.
Would just like to make a statement out there. I'm a Giants season ticket holder, bleed blue for a long time. And I'm just a little bit tired of all the sports shows and sports radio shows just bashing my man Eli Manning. And I know it's a what have you done for me lately, but this man is a two-time Super Bowl champion. You go look at the trophy room, two of those trophies are this man's, which means half of our Super Bowls are this man's. We can't be saying, oh, can this guy run the offense? His family is a quarterback family. My family does construction in New York City. We know construction. His family knows quarterbacking. Can he run a West Coast offense? Of course he can run a West Coast offense. This man has a quarterback mind from a quarterback family. What our problem to me is talking about who we have around him.
Yep.
There's no more Monty Toomer. We're talking about Corey Washington. We're talking about Odell Beckham Jr., who's never stepped on the field. A Victor Cruz is a nice player. But tell me, who else is our Pro Bowlers, man? If I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm saying, let's bracket Cruz, take him out of the game, let's make Reuben Randall and Jernigan beat me down deep. It's not happening, fellas.
Roger, you're
right.
It's
not happening.
I agree. Roger, I could not agree more. Look, I understand some Giant fans having questions. Eli's had a bad year and a half here, and he has had flashes in his career where he's been inconsistent, so I understand where some Giant fans might question things. But to me, if you put the talent around Eli, he's going to be good enough to win your Super Bowls, and we've seen it happen in the past. So if you get him weapons, if you get him protection, you get him some tight ends, you get him a running game, Eli Manning is a good enough quarterback to win in this league. Obviously, we've seen it happen twice.
That's right. Give the man time and space. I mean, when I watched that last Jet preseason game, right, what do I see? I see the line getting blown up in a four-step drop back. Victor Cruz and Randall aren't even turning around to look for the ball. The man is on the move. That is not his fault. That is not Eli Manning not grasping the system. That's not Eli Manning skittish. That's Eli Manning running for his life. Victor Cruz trying to make a play, or Reuben Randall breaking back to the ball, gentlemen, and trying to figure it out. Anyone who says Ryan Nassib is starting over Eli Manning is not a Giant fan and has walked in models.
Roger, I could not agree more, man. Thank you very much for the call. Great stuff. Love the passion.
In fairness, it's not just Giants fans that get all worked up about their backup quarterbacks. No. I've referenced the Cleveland Browns. Connor Shaw came into the fourth quarter, wowed everybody. You know, that's why you have to understand second and third stringers, that's who these guys are going
up against. How many Cowboys fans have wanted to move on from Tony Romo?
Well, but they technically haven't had anybody good worthy of replacing him. I'd love to hear somebody make a case for Kyle Orton or Brandon Weeden.
Some people would just prefer for them not to give him a contract and let him walk away, which is obviously crazy talk. It doesn't
make any
sense. Of
course, and that's what happens with a lot of the fan bases. Yeah. They tend to look at preseason games or they look at a very small resume and they say, oh, well, this guy was very productive. This guy handled pressure. But there's only so much you could put stock in terms of a preseason game.
And by the way, I wasn't trying to downplay Ryan Nassib, by the way. He has looked
he's looked a lot better
in practice the last 2 weeks due to coincide with his good play in the game. And look, he works hard. He's a good worker. He's a good kid. And he has some mobility. And I think this is why he was a mid-round pick. I'm not telling you he's a starter in this league someday, but right now he looks like he's good enough to be a backup.
And that's not a bad thing. That's actually a positive. And the fan base should be excited because you want to see them bolster the depth chart. I was looking around the league. If you looked at some of these backup quarterbacks, John, across the league, it's a very scary situation for some of these teams.
That's why all these Giant fans are so excited to trade him for get something value for him. No, you know, there's value in having a good backup. There's value in that. That's all I'm saying.
Real quickly, you look at the Chicago Bears. Jay Cutler had been banged around, that he'd been up and down in terms of his production. So the Bears last season, if you recall, they said to themselves, hey, we're finally going to invest in a respectable backup quarterback in Josh McCown. And look at what it did for them. He threw 13 touchdowns, one interception during the span in which he replaced Jay Cutler.
Almost got him into the playoffs.
When you have a good backup quarterback, it could at least be somewhat of a bridge to buy you some time.
Hey, look, Kyle Orton almost got the Cowboys into the playoffs against the Eagles that final week of the year. You think if they had a bad backup, they're even in that game? I don't think so. 201-939-4513. Ari's in New Jersey. Ari, what's going on, pal?
Going on, guys? How are you?
How are you, Ari?
All right. I finally just got a chance to watch the game, the Jets game, the other day. And I don't know what everybody's crying about. We're going to be fine. The one team that we did not look, that the starters of the Giants did not look great against, and they, you know, they got blown out of the water, was against the Colts. We got news for you. The Colts are going to be the second or third team in the AFC. I'm not worried at all. Let's see what we got going, you know, week one. And I think they're going to be fine. One thing, I don't want Jernigan on this team. What is he definitely going to be making it? Because he dropped the ball.
You know, Ari, I think that's a great question. I think that was that's one thing we're going to talk about on our pregame show tonight. It's at 6:35 on WCBS 8:80 a.m.
I don't run the fan real quick, Ari.
No, I thought we were at WCBS tonight.
I thought the Yankees play early today.
Oh, are we on the fan tonight?
It's advertised on our website.
Oh, so I guess we're on the fan. Never mind.
I just wanted to clarify.
Excuse me. If you want to tune into our pregame show, go to Sports Radio 66 or 101.9 FM. You think I know that.
Or Giants.com, of course.
Or Giants.com. Anyway, that's a great question. Is Jernigan on this team no matter what? Here's the thing. In my mind, Ari, is he on the team no matter what? I don't think so. I see he has to show me more, but He's been the third wide receiver all of training camp. In games, he's always the first guy off the bench. So unless the team is really going to just change their mind on the guy, I'd be surprised to see him go. Am I sold on him? Certainly not. That's what I'd say to you.
Okay, makes sense. If you guys want to come, I'm going to be barbecuing at the stadium a little early. I got to push your meat on the grill.
Very nice.
Oh, you know what? We might have some free time this afternoon, Ari. What parking lot are you in?
I'll probably JRK. I'll tweet you guys.
All right, sounds good,
Ari. Appreciate the phone call. Good chatting.
I will never pass up some barbecue.
One other thing on the Jarrell Jernigan front, and you know, this is something I've been thinking about over the last few days. Do you keep him because you want a wide receiver that you know is strictly going to play that position? What I mean by that, if you bring Preston Parker onto the team, nice slip of the tongue there. I'm sure you're going to kill me for that later on. I'll at least own it. If you keep Preston Parker on the team.
That's
meow. Oh, yes, absolutely. You don't have to go there. He is probably going to have some type of a role on special teams with Odell Beckham Jr. hurt. You don't necessarily want to wear him down. Corey Washington, probably more of a situational wide receiver as a guy that's going to be out there every single down. Jernigan, I'm not saying he's got the greatest track record, but you know that you can just use him as a receiver. He doesn't have to focus anymore on special
teams.
I'm more
than happy to use Parker and Washington on specials and as a wide receiver. I have no problem with that. I keep Jernigan only if I think that he's a better wide receiver that's consistent and can be that third guy ahead of the other two. And if I don't think he's better than the other two, to me, he has less value because he doesn't contribute on special teams because he can't hold on to the damn football. And Ari's right. He does have some dropsies issues.
Well documented throughout the preseason.
He doesn't have the best hands in the world. So to me, look, I would rather keep if the Giants come down to it, look at it this way, and they say we only want to keep five wide receivers. The way our roster is constructed, we can only keep five. We don't want to keep six. If I was the guy making the decisions, I'd keep Washington and Parker over Jernigan. That's what I would do.
Well, if you go five, I can't argue with that.
Right. If you go six, I think Jernigan's on the team.
I agree.
I'm not sure I keep Julian Talley over him. Not sure.
If you go six, I think Jernigan does find a way to get a spot. The only wild card, and I keep throwing this out, is Trindon Holiday. How much value do they put in him, regardless of whether or not he's been healthy or played in the preseason?
That's the
thing. Well, you do, but do they still go based on his resume before he joined the Giants? There are some players that they get the benefit of the doubt because of what they did. Now, a lot of Giants fans are going to be like, well, wait a minute, Lance, Trindon Holiday's had some ball security issues, and you're right. But do you then say to yourself, well, because of his change of the field position ability, do you at least put some stock and credibility behind that and say, hey, let's at least try to store him on the roster? That's at least something being discussed, I'll tell you that.
201-939-4513. Roldy's in New York. Roldy, what's going on?
Morning, John, Lance. How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Roldy. How's
how
everything,
are
you,
man? It sounds like you're just rolling out of bed, my friend.
I did. I actually did. I just wanted to get on here. I'm one of the fans that knows this offense is going to take time right now. You know, especially with that offensive line, you know, to build chemistry and Eli Manning having trust within that offensive line. I mean, we could just say right now the guard position is the suspect right now, preferably the right side, and also the left tackle position. You know, once that gets situated, I'm sure, you know, and they learning this new scheme, I'm sure it's going to be, you know, they'll come together eventually, but it is going to take time. And we all knew that. This is a new offensive scheme. Eli Manning has been in the same offense for a good 10 years, you know, and it's going to take him time. And it's funny how fans are calling in and saying, you know, what's going on with Eli Manning and everything like that. But those were the fans that was always bashing the Gilbride system, which I never had a problem with that system. So now the man is learning a new offense. It's like, what's wrong with Eli Manning? Give the man time.
Well,
we know
Roldy,
it's
Roldy,
time.
I want to add to you on that because I've resisted on just screaming I told you so into the microphone over the past month. But for all those people that were killing the Gilbride system and thought it'd be like a magic pill to bring in this new offense, do you know what they find out? Guess what? It doesn't matter what offense you run. If the receivers aren't that great and the offensive line doesn't block and the tight end doesn't make plays, guess what? The offense is going to look bad. You need talent. The system doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's funny to me because I'm one of the guys that really never had a problem with Gilbride's system. You know, yeah, there were times I would get upset, but that offense, when it's working, it works. You know what I mean? But, you know, fans got to realize it's going to take time. Just like when we first got a new defensive scheme when when you know, Spagnuolo came in. It took time then there too, but eventually the team, that defense already got it. What I want fans to really look at and start really worrying about, we always say, all right, you know, we got the corners, we are secondary, you know, is a real good secondary. They should be able to keep us in the game, which I agree. But at the same time, we got to really keep our eyes on that defensive line right now. Because right now, the one thing that's getting me a little bit nervous, I'm not seeing a lot of sacks. I'm not really seeing that much of a pressure. I'm seeing a little bit on occasion, but I'm not really seeing it that much. And I know JPP, you know, he's my fellow Haitian brother, man. He has to start eating a lot of Haitian food to get to that quarterback right now, because I'm not seeing it. You know, he needs to start eating some pork grillo or something like that, because I'm not seeing no sacks. He keeps saying he's 110%, and then once the preseason starts, he's like, "Oh, the preseason is really doesn't matter." You gotta be honest with me, my brother. You gotta step up and listen. Kiwi, he's been a good pro, but if you got DeMarcus Moore, I mean, you know, getting sacks, he's playing well in the preseason. I mean, it's time for the Giants to start looking at that defensive line and saying, "Listen, we need a spark there. I need this Giants fan to start really keeping their eyes on that defensive line." We need to realize that the offense is going to take time. The only way we're going to stay in the game is by defense. And if that defensive front is not pressuring the quarterback, we're in big trouble, man. We're in big trouble. Because right now I'm not seeing anything from that defensive line.
Overall, I could not agree with you more. I think you're right on the money.
That's pretty much what I have. I know Steve said it was his birthday. I know Saraceno was trying to blow up my man Steve with the Green Bay thing. I did hear that, but I'm guessing he loves Aaron Rodgers. And speaking of Saraceno, I called you out, Saraceno. I haven't seen that ice bucket challenge, man. Listen, me and Steve, we did the ice bucket challenge. A couple of guys you guys named, they haven't even come to the table. What's going on here?
Well, I could tell you, Roldy, one of the guys that Steve nominated is getting up next with the call, so we can ask him.
Whoa! I know exactly who it is. So Saraceno. Drew, Saraceno, Avery, and Derek from Atlanta. We weigh in. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Roldy.
Appreciate the phone
call. Hey, you know, it's funny. I feel like we haven't talked about the defense for like a week. Everyone's worried about the offense, and I get it. There's more questions there. There's more roster spots available on that side of the ball. But look, I agree with Roldy. The defense is going to have to be good in order to win games the beginning part of the season if the offense isn't doing what it has to do. In order for the defense to be better than good and be great, be a top 10 type of defense, he's right. You're going to have to get some pass rush. And what I've seen in practice more the last couple weeks, I've seen more of that pass rush package with Ayers and JPP at tackle, Kiwi and DeMontre Moore out there at end. And I hope that DeMontre Moore gets a few more snaps with the ones. I would like to see him go against the first-string offensive lineman for the Patriots, if they even play. I'm not even sure if they're going to play tonight. But I'd like to see him against some first-stringers to see how he does, because he could be a very important player to this Giants defense.
I think some of the Patriots offensive linemen who are going to start this season would play, considering they just traded Logan Mankins and they're still trying to work out both guard spots.
I like that trade for them,
I'd be surprised. It gave them financial flexibility, but you have to have somebody to step in now.
Well, gave a fourth-round pick. It gave him a young tight end to replace Aaron Hernandez. Yeah. So Mankins is a guy that I think they wanted to take a pay cut. He didn't want to. He'd make a lot of money next year. It's just amazing. The Patriots know how to continually refill that cupboard without having a true down year.
Well, see, the Patriots are thinking about 2-3 years from now.
They're
as
always
opposed
thinking
to the
about
short
that,
term.
Though. They're always
yeah, correct,
about
and they
that.
Do it very effectively. You have to give them credit for that.
It's amazing.
In terms of the defense, as you mentioned, it's going to have to set the tone. But the defense is going to get tested early this season, John. It's no cakewalk for them. The Lions have one of the best passing offenses in the NFL. That's the opener. Cardinals, Texans, I want to put them up there with the Lions because of, obviously, some receiver questions. And with the Texans, you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they don't necessarily have an explosive receiving core. DeAndre Hopkins is still a young guy who's complimenting Andre Johnson, and they did lose Owen Daniels at the tight end spot to free agency. But then you have the Redskins, you have the Falcons. As the season goes along, the secondary, this pass rush is going to be tested. Early, you may get a break or two. Then you're really going to start to see the true colors of this team.
RG3 might be a question, but the rest of that Redskins offense, is it?
They have
monster
plenty of
wide receivers, a really good tight end, good running back. So the first 3 weeks, you're worrying about the pass rush of the opposition and, you know, the lines in the passing game. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. I think, again, that first month's going to be a litmus test for the Giants and every team they're playing to see how good they're going to be this year. Let's go to Drew down in Virginia. Drew, what's going on, pal?
Guys, good morning, man. First and foremost, let me say this, man. This goes to Steve and the guys out there. Hey, man, I don't have a problem with doing the ice bucket challenge, but right now, man, I have a we'll just call it an issue that's kind of preventing me from doing that.
All right, I got you. No worries. We got you.
Also, the other thing, man, is you know, like I said, I don't do Twitter or Facebook, so I have to figure out a way to get it up there.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I am going to get it done, but like I said, at this point in time, it's not a good idea to be doing something.
I got
like
you,
that.
Drew. No worries.
Okay. So, but I will say this to Roldy and the guys, man. I appreciate the challenge. Good deal. And yeah, I'm gonna take you up on it, but I unfortunately, I can't do it now.
That's all right. All
right. So that said, man, after man, Roldy was right spot on, man, when he talked about the offense taking time to get it together. You know, I look at it this way, you know, because I do want to piggyback on Roldy. I want to put it this way. I think that, you know, I still say we're going to go 9-7, but yeah, I don't know. You know, it's the way the offense is kind of looking right now. It might temper that, but I still go with 9-7. That said, I figure, you know, next year, you know, given, I will say that I think Eli is smart enough to run this offense, and I think right now we have, you know, enough pieces. I mean, you're right that Eli needs weapons out there, but I guess what I'm saying, I think we're starting to get those pieces. They're not coming together yet, so I figure in about a year, you know, two at the most, I think this offense will be running. You know, this first year, and I said that earlier this year, this first year is probably going to be a struggle, you know, but I still say 9-7, but it's going to be a struggle. The other thing, man, that Roldy talked about is the defense. And, man, I could not agree again with him 1,000%, man. And, John, you guys know I'm always talking about the secondary versus the front four, okay? And I said it once, and I'll say it again. Your secondary is only as good as your front four. Now, granted, we have a good secondary on paper, okay? And the secondary should buy you a few more seconds. But, again, if you're pass rush isn't getting there, you want to burn up the secondary, okay? Because, again, you know, the offense, they know where they're going. The secondary don't. So, yeah, while your secondary is good and it should buy the front four a little bit more time, the front four better be able to get there, because if they don't, they're going to get crushed. The last thing I want to say
real quick,
is I'm getting to a point. Eli running this off. Oh no, I'm sorry. Nassib versus Eli. Hey man, look, Nassib looks good and everything else, and you know, I'm for him being the backup quarterback. But let's not kid ourselves. Let's not anoint him as the starting quarterback to replace Eli right away. That ain't going to happen. You know, like you guys said yesterday, somebody said yesterday, the only way Eli's getting benched is if he's broken up or his play is so inept. And, I mean, it has to be really, really inept for Nassib to get it out there. So all of these fans jumping for Nassib to take Eli's place, it ain't happening.
Thank
Take
you, Drew.
Care,
all right, Drew. Appreciate
the call,
phone call. Clearly, it's going to take an injury or something to get Ryan Nassib out of the football field, but I'll continue to emphasize the fact that the positive is you want to have depth at that quarterback position, and if Nassib continues to make strides, you feel better about the backup quarterback position,
and
there's nothing wrong with that.
Lance, before this preseason started, we had a question whether or not they'd have to carry three quarterbacks. Ryan Nassib has gotten to the point now where I think all of us are pretty positive they're keeping two, and Nassib's the backup, and that's a great spot to be in.
You need the depth elsewhere. Of all seasons, you need the depth elsewhere.
When you can develop a young guy and have him be your backup quarterback, that's always ideal. John in New Jersey. John, you're up next, pal.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, John.
John. What you got?
Good, good. Well, I've been listening the last couple of days, and you know, and listening to these guys talk about, well, if this guy gets cut for the offensive line, let's go pick this guy up. That guy got cut, let's go get him. If we're going to go get somebody for the offensive line, why don't we just go get Incognito and go from there? He's the best guy out there. There's nobody out there better than him. Why can't we just go get him and run with him?
John, I'll say this. If John Jerry wasn't on the roster, maybe it's something I would consider on the periphery, maybe. but you can't bring in both guys that were at the center of that Jonathan Martin thing and put them in this locker room together. The optics are just too bad, and I know it should only be about football, but some things, optics matter, image matters, PR matters. You can't have both those guys in that meeting room on this roster. You can't do it.
You know, we just want to win football games. You know, I know it's all about who's politically correct and who's not, but, you know, Giant fans, we want to win. We want another Super Bowl, and that's the only way we're going to get it done this year.
Well, I think the fact that Incognito was cleared by the NFL is going to help his cause, but I would agree with John. I think from a PR perspective, you need to take that into consideration. And, you know, Richie Incognito, while, yes, right now he's on the market, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be a better guard that could be released in the coming days. I mean, I wouldn't rank Richie Incognito as the best guard in the NFL. I think there is room for improvement. You could do better, perhaps, on the waiver wire. So, I mean, I'm sure they're going to explore those options as well.
But I will say this. If things get absolutely desperate, John, and they're like, you know what, if we don't sign an extra lineman here, we're finished, would they look at Richie? I guess they would. I wouldn't count on them, you know, discounting anybody in terms of the offensive line. But honestly, I think if something like that was going to happen, it would have happened earlier in the offseason. I just don't see it happening now.
All right, guys. Thanks for the comments.
All right, John. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Look, and I get where John's coming from. All he wants to do is, you know, win football games here, all right? He wants to get the best players on the field to protect his franchise quarterback. I get that. But sometimes outside forces do operate, and you have to respect them. And you don't want to have the army of national reporters here bothering you the week of the first regular season game, asking questions about John Jerry, Richie Incognito, and Jonathan Martin. You don't want to be dealing with that.
And I'm sure a number of teams are weighing that, John. That's a great point. If you're going to bring Richie Incognito in, it's better you do it early during minicamp,
right?
So this way you get all that media exposure out of the way and you don't have to deal with it heading into the start of the regular season, because the last thing you want is the guys answering questions in the locker room. The other thing, let's not forget this. Richie Incognito, I understand he's an attractive option because he's out there on the market. He and John Jerry were a part of one of the worst offensive lines last season. Everybody tends to forget about that.
It's not like
Ryan Tannehill was sacked nearly 60 times last year. Is that a glowing resume to you?
It's not like Incognito's a Pro Bowler, folks. He's not. He's a good player. He's not fantastic.
I think he could do better. From a talent perspective. I'm not talking about from a PR
perspective.
Or you
could get someone nearly as talented without
correct.
All the baggage. And I think that's probably going to be at some point worth doing. 201-939-4513. We'll take a couple more callers. We got a game tonight, not a whole lot going on this afternoon, so we'll go a little bit longer. Maybe we'll stick with you until 10:45, 11 o'clock. We'll see how long we go. Let's go to Markel in New Jersey next. Markel, what's happening?
Hello. Yeah, I want to go to the situation with JPP. The thing is, this at the end of the season, isn't he like a free agent?
He is. That's correct.
Yeah, so this is a big year for him. If he don't produce and he have a bad season like last year, knowing the Giants, they're not going to give him a contract, and that's going to be another type of Hakeem Nicks type of thing.
Yeah, you are 100% right. He's going to have a big year. I was happy to see him be healthy last week after he went down with that leg injury in the first quarter. He seemed to be okay, but I will say this. I was a little discouraged that, you know, JPP was down for so long and had to get back up, because to me, some guys in the NFL, Markel, are guys that deal with injuries well. And they play through them. They don't affect them. They maintain their effectiveness despite the injury. We've seen the last 2 years when JPP has gotten hurt, whether it's his back or his shoulder, those are his two injuries. You know, and again, I can't speak to the severity of him and how much they actually did limit him physically. You know, he struggles playing through those injuries. So I think it's so important for him to stay 100% healthy. I believe if he stays 100% healthy, Markel, that he can be a double-digit sack guy. Is he going to get to 16.5 like he did 2 years ago? Probably not. But can he get to 10 or 12? I think he could. And if he does that, guess what? He's going to get a big-time contract this offseason. So, really, it's all in JPP's hands. It's also in, you know, the gods of luck's hands to, you know, keep him healthy. But if he stays healthy, I think he's going to play pretty well.
And Markel, what you hit on is there's more than enough motivation this season for JPP to go out there and make a big-time statement, because it has to do with bouncing back from a statistical standpoint, but also there's financial incentives. You do well, you're going to get paid.
Yeah, and I have one more question, and then
sure.
I get off. Another thing about is the secondary. Jerry Reese and them, they might have to do a little bit like with the secondary and free agency, because they only signed Walter Thurman and them to open Stevie Brown to to I think like a 1 year contract. So it's not like they're locked up for a little bit.
Well, and by the way, Prince Mukamara only has 1 year left on his deal, and that's a non-guaranteed year next year for him too. So theoretically, three out of the top five, and throwing Ancho Arroyo, by the way, who's a free agent after this year. So you talk about how great the secondary is. Four out of the top five guys could theoretically or don't have guaranteed contracts for next season. So I think that's a very good point as well.
Yeah. Today's a big game. I want to see what this depth chart thing. Yeah, but I'll call tomorrow.
All right, Markel.
All right, Markel. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah. In fairness, though, the flip side is it also protects you in case players don't live up to expectations, too. You need to at least take that into consideration.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just stating facts.
But it is a scary situation. If everybody plays well, you're not going to have enough money to toss around and re-sign them. But that's a good problem because that means that the Giants would have a good season if everybody does play up
to expectations. Well, here's the thing. And, you know, people talk about all this extra cap space the Giants have this year. They have something like, I think, double digits, almost, you know, $9 to $12 million of cap space. People are like, why aren't they using it? Why aren't they spending it to help the offensive line? Do you know why they're not spending it to help the offensive line? The way the NFL rules work now, you can carry that cap space over to the following season. So let's say next year the cap's going to come in at, let's say it goes up a few million. It goes up to like 132, something like that. All right? And they have, let's say, $13 million of cap space open this year that wasn't used. They can carry that into next year, and then they'll have $145 million to spend next season. And you know what? Eli's still making a ton of money next year. You're going to have to either you're going to sign Prince to a long-term deal or you're going to have to pay him that $8 or $9 million, whatever that non-guaranteed year is, which is a big raise for him. You're going to have to pay Ancho Arroyo if he has a big year. You might have to pay Walter Thurman if he has a big year.
JPP.
You might have to pay Jason Pierre-Paul if he has a big year. And there you go. Those are five big contracts you're going to have to give out there. If you want to add another person on the offensive line, that could be a contract you have to give out in the offseason. So – guys, look, you're going to have to save that money for next year to try to get all these guys underneath the salary cap. Plus, Colin Jenkins will be a year over. Do you want to replace him at tackle? Mathias Kiwanuka is a free agent. Or are you going to have to replace him at defensive end along with Jason Pierre-Paul? These are all questions that are going to have to get answered next offseason. The Giants are going to have financial flexibility to do it.
Plus, who knows what happens with the receiving core? Do they want to go out and make a big splash to get a compliment for Victor Cruz? You want to have some financial flexibility. And I think that as a result, you have to be wise in terms of how you attack these next few weeks. Do you want to go out and make a splash, or do you want to absorb a contract perhaps that could put you in a precarious situation moving forward? It's a matter of really balancing your short-term and long-term goals. Every team has to deal with it. Giants are not necessarily in any unique situation. We were talking about the New England Patriots earlier. Sometimes they trade away contracts because they're thinking about giving themselves flexibility at this time next year. The Giants have to think that way too, but at the same time, the fan base would argue, well, wait a minute, we also want to win this year. And that's why you do. You need to weigh. Listen, if we bring in a guy, are we going to get an immediate impact out of him? And at the same time, is he not going to put us in a position where he's going to harm us financially? So those are a lot of the factors that need to go into the conversation. And speaking of the offensive line, which obviously is a big topic of discussion, getting a good question here out on Twitter, Dane at D Hyundai, is the issue with the O-line talent related, or is it the lack of time to get into a solid unit and learn the assignments? It's a great question, and I'm going to give the boring answer. I think it's a combination of both.
I think it is, too.
That is the boring answer, but it hits on a number of issues that the Giants are toying with and dealing with right now, but I think you've had injuries, so you haven't had the same group of offensive linemen out there consistently. And at the same time, let's face it, some of the backups haven't produced the way that they anticipated, and even some of the starters haven't necessarily lived up to expectations. So that, to me, backs up both of those questions right there.
I agree. And look, I think talent's part of it. You know, can Will Beatty bounce back and have a good enough year? We'll see. You know, has he had a chance to get chemistry with whoever his left guard's going to be? I guess it's going to be Weston Richburg. We'll see. But no, probably not. That still has to get there. Weston Richburg's moved to all different parts of the line right now. He's probably not sitting comfortable in any one spot. Right guard, Brandon Mosley's actually been there for most of camp. If he can come back and be healthy, him and Pugh, you would think, should have some type of chemistry at that spot, which is a good thing. So I think it is both. I think you hope these guys are talented enough to do it, but you also have to build chemistry. It's both. It really is. It's boring, but it's true.
Well, the chemistry is probably the big telling stat right now, or storyline, I should say, moving forward, because you just want to see the same unit out there in practice and in the games, and it has fluctuated so much during the preseason. One guy goes down with an injury when you least expect. For example, you know, this week they were anticipating to have at least hopefully Brandon Mosley out there. There's no guarantee now with the back issue. So that all of a sudden now brings in John Jerry to the right guard spot. And John Jerry's been getting work throughout the preseason. But remember, he missed all of OTAs in minicamp, recovering from an offseason knee injury. So that impacted his ability to get out there and build some chemistry. It's been one guy comes in, another guy goes out. One guy goes out, another guy comes in. That's been the biggest storyline throughout this whole offseason.
And like you like to say, a game of musical chairs does not help things.
Never does.
I think that probably is the phrase you've said the most on this show.
I definitely have utilized that phrase, and I'll probably utilize it tonight, too.
I'm a big fan of Game of Musical
Chairs. Oh, boy, do I ever. Hey, it's very fitting for this whole line.
Let's go to Shakes in Maryland. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
What's going on, John?
How are you, Shakes?
How are we doing, Shakes?
I'm good. It's game day. So
yeah, you sound upbeat. This is nice. See, this is exactly how I want you to answer the phone calls every time we go to you.
Hey, every time it's game day, you might hear this out of me. Last year it was kind of crazy, but yeah. All right, I want to say a few things. First and foremost, let me say, Drew, please get that out to your vocabulary. I mean, you say that every time, and every time you make a point, it's first and foremost. Ain't that first and foremost? Ain't that third and foremost? Fourth and foremost? I mean, jeez, Drew.
It shakes in fairness. Everyone has verbal tics. I have verbal tics. Lance has verbal tics. We all have verbal tics.
No doubt. Now, I wanted to say something real quick about my ice bucket challenge. I'm going to have it. I'm going to put it up. I got it. I actually did it yesterday finally, because everybody's been killing me about it. But I'm sorry, it's going to be a little plug, okay? I'm not putting it up yet because we are relaunching bbnuncensored.com, and I want to have that as a special feature for our website.
See, now, this is the type of forethought that we need our technical gurus here to put into when they decide to make their various website machinations.
Hey, it's a business deal.
Absolutely. Hey, you could get a sponsorship behind it. You're thinking big, Shakes. I don't blame you. That's the name of the game. Capitalize.
I wanted to ask y'all a question, and then I wanted to go on something. Okay, two questions. First off, will Mosley be back for week one?
They seem to be pretty confident that both his and James Brewer's back injuries are not serious. They believe both guys, if Brewer's on the team, would be healthy and be available to play week one of the regular season.
Okay. I hope he will be back because I like when Richburg came in, I like the chemistry between Richburg, Walt, and Mosley. Something just clicked and the offense looked like it, you know, they were gelling.
I would agree. I think that's an excellent point, Shakes. On that final drive in the last preseason game when they went 11 plays, 91 yards, that was the alignment. And that was right after Jeff Schwartz got hurt. So you would like to see more of that out on the field. That's a great point.
Yep. Even the drive before that, because I think when Schwartz went out, they had some continuity with each other. And then I think we ended up punting or whatever. But we was looking good. And then the next drive, that was the 91. Yeah, so they definitely look like they gel together. I don't know what that is all about, but they look good. Which brings me to this. Since Schwartz was looking so bad at left guard, why don't we just throw him at right guard? He went in public and said, I'm a righty. He's successful at right guard in Kansas City. Why don't we move him?
Well, Shakes, I think that's what's going to happen eventually. When he gets back, if Richburg shows in Schwartz's time out that he is a good enough left guard to stay there permanently, I would not be surprised if when Schwartz gets back, he'll replace Mosley on the right side and they'll leave Westberg alone at left guard. I would not be shocked if that happens.
And you can use an example from last season to piggyback off of John's point, Shakes. David Deal has the finger injury leading into the regular season. Justin Pugh starts the season at right tackle. And when Deal was healthy, he did not take his job back. So I think that if Richburg does show that he could solidify one of the spots, why would you break the continuity factor?
Or, Shakes, quite frankly, if Richburg and Mosley are both really good the first 3 or 4 weeks, you know what? Schwartz might not get his job back.
And that's crazy because we just paid him a lot of money.
I know, but Shakes, if the guys are playing well, don't take him out.
I agree with that, but then it's looking at Schwartz like, okay, we spend all this money on you. That's the main thing that I didn't want to bring in another tackle because I didn't want that tackle to, you know, come in. We have a lot of investment, and then the tackle shows up, and then what, we got Beatty sitting on the bench for $35 million? I don't like it.
Well, Shakes, the bottom line is you always need a lot of offensive linemen, though. These guys never stay healthy the whole year. So even if Schwartz doesn't come back and doesn't play right away, trust me, they'll need him at some point, whether it's at left guard, right guard, or at right tackle.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to get on this Richie Incognito thing, okay? Because I'm in for it. Now, I wanted to say this. Since y'all got all these character guys, all these team captains and all this y'all drafted this year, no, why am I saying y'all? We drafted this year. Why do y'all seem to think that Richie Incognito can just come in the locker room with the reputation that he has and just blow up the whole locker room?
Oh, no, Chase, I don't think the locker room would get blown up. I think the team would handle it fine. It's all the outside distractions, especially this close to the regular season, that I think people would like to avoid. I don't think it'd be a locker room issue. I think the guys would handle it just fine.
Keep in mind, Shakes, John Jerry, and appreciate the phone call, Shakes.
Thanks
so much. John Jerry, he was asked about his role in the bullying scandal. It wasn't as if the media all of a sudden avoided that storyline, but Jerry answered those questions very early in the offseason. Actually, one of the first few days of training camp, John, when John Jerry met the media, he was asked about, because this was the first time he spoke to the media since he really wasn't seen during the offseason OTA minicamp
and
period.
He didn't really answer anything.
He didn't really answer
said,
it, but,
I'm not answering
but
this.
The point, well, I thought he handled it fine because
oh,
he didn't
sure.
open the door for
yeah.
them to all of a sudden
right.
run with that storyline. But the point is, it was out of the way.
Yeah.
You don't have to now rehash it. You bring in Richie Incognito. Not only do you now bombard him with questions, you now all of a sudden ask John Jerry about what it's like being reunited with Richie Incognito. Are you concerned about getting back to old habits? Listen, we can sit here and speculate and play the, you know, game of 21 questions and so forth, 20 questions all the time because of what the media is going to try to do. This is New York. They need things of substance outside of just breaking down who's going to be the third or fourth wide receiver
right.
on this roster. And I think those are the things that Tom Coughlin and company are going to look at before they would think about signing somebody.
I mean,
like
could
that.
You imagine the back page if they brought in Incognito?
Giant headache.
Would it be like Bullygate?
Something like that. You know they're going to have fun with it. Absolutely. And you have to anticipate that.
Yeah.
Once again, if this conversation or this necessity comes forth and it's April or May, John, it's a different story. We're talking about we're approaching week one of the regular season.
No one wants to deal with that. You got to focus on football. Final call of the show at 201-939-4513. We lost Juan. We lost Juan. All right. Everybody, good job on the phones today. Excellent job on Twitter. My computer ran out of power. You got any tweets you want to go through there, Lance?
Let's take a look.
Got anything?
I know there was a number of comments on the offensive line. Mike Farmer also throwing out a few tweets that he and his brother are campaigning to take over as GM and assistant GM. So that has been quite entertaining.
Probably not going to work.
I don't know if that campaign's going
to
last.
I saw one before my computer died from Elo Bajo saying, you don't really need to be that mobile to succeed in this system. Would you consider Joe Montana mobile quarterback? No, Joe Montana was a Randall Cunningham, but he can move. I consider, if you want to have a good comparison, I think Drew Brees and Joe Montana probably have similar mobility, right? I would say their style with their ability to move and throw on the move is probably rather identical, right? Brees and Montana?
That's fair. I mean, Brees I don't consider a very mobile quarterback.
No, but he can
and
move.
Same
a little
thing
bit.
With Montana. They can move. Eli and even Danny Langsdorf, the QB coach, mentioned he is more athletic than I think people give him credit. I'm not saying that he's going to run a sprint here or there, but there were a few plays during the preseason where he did roll out,
sure.
and he looked smooth. He didn't look awkward as if, oh, my God, it's a guy with two left feet all of a sudden.
The play to Cruz for
correct.
Example.
So, I mean, you got to give him a little credit for that. But, yes, he's not necessarily the most mobile quarterback, and he's not a quarterback that I would feel confident, you know, running a lot of plays with
right.
his legs during the course of a game. That would be definitely a red flag. And I don't know if they're going to put him in that position. I understand Nassib has flourished in different plays, but if Ben McAdoo is smart, he's not going to put Eli Manning in a position where he's going to constantly be rolling out of the pocket. It would make no sense giving Manning's track record. You don't want to all of a sudden play that game or go down that road as you start the regular season. Let's see. Mike Farmer's got a comment on Richie Incognito. So let's see what the authorities have to say in that department. I disagree that Incognito is the best guy out there. We really need a tackle over a guard anyway. Could use both, though. Well, I agree with him about Incognito's not necessarily the best guard out there. And I referenced what happened with the Dolphins last season. In terms of needing a tackle more so than a guard, John, I don't know. I would say there's probably a bigger need at guard right now, given the injuries, no? I mean, yes, there's injuries behind Beattie.
Who's the third guard? Who's the third tackle on this team right now that's healthy?
Well, it's guys that you probably can't name.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not going to deny that. They're healthy, but they're not necessarily
They're not going to be on the roster.
Yes.
They're not going to be on the roster.
But there's issues at guard, too.
And I don't know the extent of Charles Brown's injury, but, you know, if he's going to be back and be fine for week one, then, yeah, maybe you don't have a huge need to tackle. But
well, Brewer is probably going to be back. I'm not telling you to get all overly excited over Brewer, but Brewer is like Mosley. I don't think the back injury is going to be a lengthy, lingering process.
I think he might find his way back on this team again, might he?
Out of necessity and bodies, I think he probably will make his
it
way
really
back
is.
On this roster. See, if only Ramsey's Barden could play offensive line. I'm telling you, and, you know, I mean, I know I'm making light of the situation, but sometimes it's the position you
it
play
is.
That benefits
That's
you.
That's true.
Think about it. If we see any other tweets off the air, we'll address them. Actually, one more I'll throw out here. Eli M. Gray, Cards and Texans will be a good test for our offensive line. Hope Eli will survive. We were talking and speculating about the early opponents. And, yes, in terms of the pass rush, the Cardinals and Texans are going to certainly give them a challenge. However, as John noted earlier in the show, the Cardinals just lost Darnell Dockett. And let's not forget that Carlos Dansby, who had a career year last year, is now with the Cleveland Browns. He was a key linebacker. So that's two significant losses, in my opinion. It'll be very interesting to see how this pass rush comes together for Arizona in the early goings.
Give me a couple predictions for tonight. Who's going to have a big game for the Giants? And who's going to maybe fall on their face a little bit? Give me a couple predictions.
I think Peyton Hillis is going to take advantage of his reps tonight.
I agree. I'm with
you on that. I think he's going to be motivated given the fact that he's missed the last few games. He wasn't tentative later in practice as opposed to early when he returned from that foot injury. So I'm going to look for some big things out of Peyton Hillis tonight. In the receiving department, I think Manningham is going to make this competition real interesting. This is going to be a game where he's going to go out there, make a play to give the coaches something to discuss, something to talk about. Doesn't mean it's going to guarantee him a roster spot, but I think Manningham is definitely going to make the conversation really interesting come these last few days as they narrow down to the 53.
I think Hinoski will make a couple plays and solidify the fullback role. I think Daniel Fells will make a few plays and make a late run at that starting tight end position. And defensively, let's think. I think the first team will get at least one sack. How about that?
That would be a big step in the right direction.
Wouldn't hurt.
Though we were talking about DeMontre Moore earlier. He had a great game coming off that Jets contest. And I don't think he's gotten enough credit in terms of the fumble recovery, no. Two sacks. He was very active in that
I
game.
Find this amazing. We were hearing more about DeMontre Moore last year when he wasn't doing anything in the preseason. This year he's doing stuff in the preseason. I can't get a phone call about the
Correct.
Guy. What the hell?
It's the example of the hype machine. No, it's a great point. Everybody gets hyped over rookies and draft picks and saying to themselves.
I blame Dottino.
Well, Dottino is certainly a culprit of anything that we can throw his way. But when a player comes into the NFL, everybody gets caught up in the collegiate resume. Right. And they think that it's automatically going to translate to the NFL. It's similar to Johnny Manziel, John. Why is Manziel getting so much credit when he barely's played any NFL snaps? Oh, well, Johnny did this at Texas A&M, so you know it's going to all of a sudden translate well into Cleveland. And it's the same thing with any draft pick for any team. You see what he did in his respective college system and you say, wow, he's going to be an excellent fit for the Giants system. It takes time for rookies to get a feel for the NFL. Yes, some come in day one and thrive, but very few do. You can't expect everybody to follow that blueprint. That is my dissertation for today.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, it'd be nice if Odell could even get on the field to just show what he could do.
That would help.
That would be a big step.
But, I mean, the last Giants rookie that was really a monster and a huge contributor's rookie year was probably Knicks, right? I mean, Kiwanuka was okay his first year in the league, but he wasn't a beast.
Probably have to go back to Akeem next. David Wilson got opportunities, but didn't make the most of
it. JPP was a developing player. Kenny Phillips did well.
Prince got hurt. Thinking about those early round picks for the Giants.
Yeah.
It's been very rare for them to come in year one and wow everybody. Akeem Nicks, I think, is probably the best example.
And he only had, what, 52, 53 catches his rookie year?
Let's see what Nicks did.
800 yards, something like that.
I mean, that's still solid, but
oh, no,
it's
saying,
not
but
as if he came in and had 1,000 yards,
right.
Which is a rare circumstance
Correct.
For a rookie wide receiver. I think you got to go back to Michael Clayton, who actually had
Wait,
an appearance
Keenan
with the Giants
Allen had, like,
in Tampa
Bay. Keenan
Allen
had, like, the best year of a rookie wide receiver in years last year, and he had, well, like, 70 catches for 900-something yards, and it was the best rookie year since Michael Clayton, if I recall. So, look, rookies don't come in and do damage very quickly, bottom line. All right, here's the deal. Tomorrow, we'll be on at 9:30. Lance and I will be bleary-eyed, we'll be tired, we'll be cranky, it'll be fun.
Chippy.
We'll be a little chippy.
You name it.
We'll give you our 53s, and we'll hear your tough cuts and the final guys on the roster for you. Tonight, did you double-check? Is it WFAN?
I'm going to look. I'm pretty sure on our website. I just wanted to clarify Akeem Nix's reception just
okay.
So we throw the right facts out.
Give me that first.
2009, 47 receptions on 75 targets,
okay.
790 receiving yards, so you were close in that 800 barometer, and he had 6 touchdowns.
Okay.
So in that 50 ballpark for receptions, 800 receiving yards. In terms of the broadcast tonight, and I'm pretty sure I saw WFAN. And as
I mentioned,
Yankees play this afternoon.
Yankees are in the afternoon,
so
we'll,
I mean,
we'll
I can't
be on
see,
fan.
And it
we'll
is WFAN on the site. Yeah, we'll be on the fan.
Well, you're assuming the site's correct.
Oh, we're throwing everybody under the bus tonight. The Tino, our tech gurus, you name it. It's open season this morning. They're all not here anyway. They're going to work half a day.
I'm just having fun.
Absolutely.
I'm just
I will never shy away from throwing a few people under the bus.
Yeah, so we'll be on FAN tonight, pregame at 6:35, 7:35 kickoff. Make sure you check it out. By the way, just to update people, because I know people have been complaining, we've had some issues with the phones. As you can tell today, we know what the problem is. My man Joe and I did tests for about 3 hours yesterday, and we've locked down the problem. If a caller's on hold or on the air, basically in our system, for 15 minutes, and it's almost on the dot every time.
You're actually going to go through this explanation?
I am, yeah.
This is phenomenal.
And I'm just going to explain to people what and how we're going to try to work it through it. They will lose audio for whatever reason. We can still hear them, but they can't hear us. So we know it's an issue. It's not the equipment, because I repeated the problem in here with this set of gear, in the studio with a different set of equipment, and a mic with a completely different brand, name, everything part of equipment. So this is a phone line issue. Not sure if it's a Verizon issue or if it's a building issue. I'm working on that. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. Why this happened to just pop up in the last week or so, I have no idea. But we're trying to get to a solution. So until we figure that out technically, like today, and I don't think we rushed through callers, but we'll go through them a little bit quicker so we don't run into the phone issue. So that's where we're at. Just want to update the fans.
Trying to speed up the pace. This way you don't waste your time on hold, and obviously we try to get to you as quickly as possible.
Which basically means, and this is a good thing for the people that want to call, and that means by the time you get put on hold and finish your phone call, it'll be less than 15 minutes. So I think that's a good thing for everybody. So if you try to call in, and this is kind of why I brought it up, if you try to call in and you're hearing a busy signal, what we're doing, we're not screening calls right away. We're waiting to screen calls. So if it rings, just keep calling. Eventually, when we figure out to get you within that 15-minute time frame, we'll screen you, we'll put you up, and we'll go from there. So that's kind of where we're at. Just want to make sure the people that
forward.
Are calling up, make sure they know what the deal is. But again, I think we'll be able to get the issue fixed. Once it's fixed, we'll go back to the old ways. We'll screen you, put you on hold, and then you'll wait 45 minutes to talk to Paul Dottino, get one point in, and then you'll get cut off.
John has made it very clear that he has cleared out his entire weekend schedule. He will be coming into the office, and he will be talking with the proper phone company. He'll be connecting one wire after another. So don't lose sleep, everybody. He is sacrificing Labor Day weekend to make sure that we are up and running next
week. I'll be here Friday. I'll be here Monday. I am not setting foot in this place Saturday and Sunday.
Well, the schedule may be discussed behind closed doors. We may have to tweak the schedule here. I think we can use a little bit more out of you this weekend.
Everybody, enjoy the game tonight. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com, 9:30. Make sure you're there.